Good morning and welcome to Carolina Perspective. I'm Sherry Bernardi and my guest this morning is Charleston probate judge Irv Condon. And among other things, Judge Condon has plans started and has presided over the Charleston County Adult Drug Court going back to 1999. I think that kind of is going to feed into what we're going to talk about. Free probate court workshops on mental health and substance abuse. Now, the next one is going to be held in just a couple of days, Tuesday, September 12th. Judge Condon, it's wonderful to speak to you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for having me today. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. From the looks of it, you just don't wear the robes of your profession. I've been reading up on everything you're involved in. You really get involved, it seems, in what's happening in the courts, but those who filter through the courts. Tell us about these workshops, and we'll delve into it a little deeper as we go along.
Yeah, our team, we've always been trying to reach out to the community since I was elected back in 1995. We initially started with workshops here at the courthouse, and then as the community has grown and as our resources have grown, we now have, last 5 or 6 years, we've got senior centers that have popped up and helping our seniors, so we go there. And then our libraries, all of them have been renovated and have wonderful community public space. So we've been out in the community from Edisto to McClellanville to North Charleston, holding our workshops there, whether it's on estate administration, estate planning, or getting help, getting treatment for a loved one who's suffering from either substance use disorder or mental illness.
Mental health and substance abuse, do these two just always kind of go hand in hand?
Yep, there are many that have coexisting, or dual diagnosis, both mental health and substance use disorders. Our probate court has jurisdiction over involuntary commitments, and that's for alcohol and drug and also for mental illness. And we hope people will get the treatment they need. So we encourage people to go voluntarily to our treatment providers. One is our Charleston Center that has a brand new building up there on Rivers Avenue. And the other is our Charleston Dorchester Community Mental Health Center located west of the Ashley at Charlie Hall Boulevard. So we hope our loved ones, mental illness and alcohol and drug affects all of our families. We hope people will go voluntarily. So we encourage that first. But if not, we do have an involuntary commitment process, and that's where probate court comes in. And then after that, if someone gets involved in the criminal justice system, I led different teams to start what we call problem-solving courts. The first was a drug court. I went down to Miami and experienced their drug court. They had a judge that was Judge Goldstein, who was a Brooklyn cop turned lawyer turned judge, started the first drug court down in Miami. And he helped us start our drug court here back in the late 90s. And then in the early 2000s, I went out to Seattle, and they had taken the drug court concept and model and started a mental health court. So they had an individual that killed an off-duty fireman after a Seattle Mariners baseball game.
Yeah.
And that patient was under a civil commitment order. So they used the tools of drug court to start a mental health court, and we've done the same here. So the recap, what we want are people to go voluntarily to treatment. If they don't, then we have an involuntary commitment process, a civil commitment process. And then third, if they're involved in the criminal justice system, that's where our drug court or mental health court come into play. And then I've also started a veterans treatment court to help our veterans get the help they need. All of those courts, we're just trying to give people a second chance, keep them out of jail, out of prison. And we're not there to punish, but we are there to change your behavior. And we changed your behavior by the use of incentives and or sanctions.
When you ask people to submit voluntarily, do you get many takers, or is it kicking and screaming? How, are they receptive to this second chance kind of, would you like to get clean? Would you like to get help?
Yeah, many people are receptive to that. So, that's the first step. And we have two wonderful programs, our organizations. We've got the Charleston Center, which is a branch of the Department of Alcohol and Other Drug Services, known as DAOTIS. And then we have the Charleston Dorchester Community Mental Health Center. But you're right. Not everybody will go voluntarily. And that's where family members can step in. Or if we have an event, we're blessed to have a mobile crisis here in our community, and it's now spreading statewide. If somebody is a danger to self or a danger to others, if there's some event going on, a mobile crisis will be called to the scene, and they may start the commitment process. Many of our commitments come in that way. And then the other way is, again, the criminal justice system. Our public defenders and prosecutors, they all want people to get the help they need. Yeah. So those problem-solving courts come in there.
You know, I've no doubt, you know, you see the news from across the country, and we're always told, or we've been told, that our mental health suffered during the pandemic and during the lockdowns. You see it up close because you're a judge, but is that true? Or do you think the pandemic kind of triggered something in people where there are more troubled people out there? Or is it just a handy excuse as to why people are acting up?
I would defer to the mental health experts, but I think the data does show that the pandemic did heighten, mental illness and alcohol and drug abuse. People were home, had more free time. Many were not interacting with others, which is one way that if we interact with each other, people can spot the mental illness or get the person the help they need.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely the lockdowns that did cause a spike in that area.
You probably deal mostly with adults. Do you ever deal with school-age kids who get in trouble?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We, in my tenure since 1995, it was very rare initially to have a commitment for somebody under the age of 18. But more and more, that's very common. And we even had last week a 7-year-old. So it's amazing. 10, 11, 12, it's starting much earlier.
That's just tragic.
It is tragic. The numbers are there, maybe not as high definitely as the adult side,
right.
But we're seeing some when we used to see none. The criteria there is, are they carrying out age-appropriate behavior? And many are not, and that's where we may have an incident and individuals step in and have to get the help they need. For these individuals that, it's our family members that are a danger to themselves or a danger to others.
And you got to wonder let's just use the age of a 7-year-old, what they are experiencing that puts them on that mental health or substance abuse track, and then what else might be going on. That's just terribly troubling to think that our young people, because we're going to rely on them someday, that they are being injured or injuring themselves so early in their life.
Yeah, I think I would defer to the experts, but I think a lot of studies, it's the social media.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different factors, the breakdown of the family,
mm-hmm.
Many factors out there. People don't know what drugs they're taking and peer pressure. There's just so many different factors out there.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm glad I grew up when I did, when we didn't have, I didn't have a computer in my pocket, the smartphone, even though they're very useful. But I can see a young person, you can get swept away by that, by the power in that handheld device and what it can show you, what it can introduce you to. Kids, Judge, I think kids have always found a way to get into trouble. It may not be real big trouble, but, kids push the envelope, let alone now.
Right. I think that's what we see. I mean, the old time, it was the drug dealer that was on the corner of the bad part of town. Well, that's not the case anymore.
No.
That drug dealer can be on the phone and accessible to anyone that has a mobile device or access to a computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's these times we're living in. There's something else. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Judge Irv Condon. He is a Charleston County probate judge. And we're talking about something coming up that might interest you or a loved one that you want to turn them on to this. It's a probate court workshop on mental health and substance abuse. It's going to happen on the next one is Tuesday, September 12th. And I believe, is that one going to happen on James Island at the Baxter Patrick Library, 1858 Grimble Road? Is that James Island?
Yeah, I believe that's the site. And you can go to our website at the Google Charleston County Probate Court, and you work your way. You can see the different seminars that we offer or workshops, and they're all free. And we do workshops on estate planning, the need for everyone to have a will.
Oh, yes.
Healthcare, power of attorney, those different documents. And then we also do, if you've lost a loved one, we do a workshops on estate administration and how to probate in the estate. And we walk you through that process. The
Go
newer
ahead.
Ones we're doing are, you know, getting treatment for a loved one.
Tell us what will happen at this workshop on September 12th.
Generally at the workshops, I run through a PowerPoint explaining what resources are available in our community, and then walk through the court process in each of those areas. You know, first we'll start off going through the voluntary services that somebody could sign up for. And then second, we walk through the involuntary process, the civil commitment process, and how that's confidential. We just want people to get the treatment and the help they need. And then third, I would walk through the problem-solving courts if somebody had an individual family member involved in the criminal justice system, somebody who's facing charges and wants to better their life. If they meet certain parameters, then they can come into these, either the veterans court, the mental health court, or the drug court.
Who usually shows up at these workshops? Is it loved ones saying, my nephew, my son, someone in my family needs help? Or do the people who need help show up?
It's generally the family members that have another family member experiencing a substance use disorder or mental health issues. It's usually not the individual. But we hope we invite those individuals also to come. We're there to give them the help and support them through the process, trying to take, the stigma off of seeking help or getting help. And it has changed over the years. It's not where we'd like it to be, but it's much improved that somebody getting treatment or getting help is not frowned upon or looked down upon. And everybody knows, if you have diabetes, you go to a doctor. If you have, I've got acid reflux and I have to take medicine for that. So we're trying to just say it's another medical condition and you just need to get the help you need.
Yeah, yeah. How many do you think are successful?
If somebody makes it through, it's just amazing the impact they have, not only on their family, but others around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would invite you to come when we have a commencement for mental health court or drug court, particularly and even veterans court. You'll see individuals that have turned their lives around. Family members are there. There's crying that takes place, happy crying.
Yeah.
That they've been united with their family. And it's just very powerful when you do change the life of someone that has been missing from their family because of drugs and alcohol or because of mental illness.
Oh, yeah. It's like turning a light on in a dark room. I mean, suddenly you're awake again and you're not in that daze. I have known people who have people in their family who have gone through things like this. And thankfully, they were able to, shake the bad habits. And it's such a change you see in these people. I mean, I don't know how much you're involved in the aftermath, or if they show up every once in a while and thank you, or their family members do. But if they're able to go all the way with this, it is certainly a new day for them.
It's very amazing. It's very rewarding. I mean, I've got friends that have gone through our programs, and we continue to be friends. I was their judge, and now I'm their friend. I see Arnold over at the College of Charleston. I see Deidre in North Charleston. I see Jeffrey, who texts me happy birthday every year. It's just amazing when you do turn somebody away from drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
And then get somebody the help they need, related to mental illness. It's very powerful, very rewarding. And the families are just so thankful that they have their son or daughter back.
Oh, definitely. Is the journey away from substance abuse, is it different when it comes to mental health? You know, that's, I always think with mental health, we have medications for that. You know, I always think that because it's a mental thing rather than, you know, substance abuse, you just have to say no. But mental health, is that a little more complicated, or are they kind of the same or even?
Yeah, they both, you know, mental health can be a lifelong illness, and there are medications that do help. And that's the issue we face many times in our civil commitments, that is we get people to get the help they need. And we now have a program called court-assisted treatment, where we follow up with those that are going through the civil commitment process.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, many of them are doing very, very well, and then they stop taking their medication.
Yeah.
And then that whole cycle comes back around. So that's one of the challenges we have, are getting our citizens, our family members, to take the medication as instructed by their doctor. Many times they think they're feeling well, as I indicated, and they stop taking the medication, and then they spiral back, and that's when, you know, mobile crisis and others get involved, and we go through that process again.
Yeah, you would think if you're feeling well, you give credit to the medication, and you don't say, I don't need these pills anymore, I'm doing great.
Right.
Yeah, on the other hand, you contrast that with somebody with substance use disorder. Many times they can complete the programs. We do have, you know, self-help meetings that can definitely help them continue that sobriety, you know, AA and NA.
Mm-hmm.
But that's always a worry, because alcohol and drugs are throughout our community and in our society, so the temptation's always there. So we try to make sure we keep them engaged. And those support groups, support meetings are very helpful to many individuals.
Yeah, and what I think would be difficult when it comes to, say, substance abuse is a lot of things people are addicted to. I don't mean, you know, the hard drugs, but let's just say alcohol. Well, they have stores that stock that. Anyone can walk in and buy whatever they want. You know, it's not like, you know, if you're living on the wild side and, you know, you're trying to get a hold of something, a very exotic, illegal drug, alcohol's everywhere.
Yeah, that is an issue. And I would want to point out that there are groups that are trying to help individuals and to save lives.
Yeah.
And they have some medications that, you know, do harm reduction, one being Narcan.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get free Narcan training. Wake Up Carolina, located over there in Mount Pleasant, called Creighton's House. Nancy Shipman lost her son, Creighton. And it's just amazing. I think you've seen some of the advertisement, the federal advertisement. You know, watch out. You take one pill.
Yes.
And this fentanyl coming from China through Mexico, it can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to watch for that. And I've been to too many funerals where we've lost individuals. And many times the indication is that this is like their first use. And that fentanyl, even in very, very small quantities, can be fatal.
Yeah, it's just incredible that how much of that stuff is able to seep into the U.S. And, you know, I think we expect more of an outcry. I mean, every city knows that it is an infection, but yet I don't think we're getting the action that we should be getting, maybe from Washington. I mean, a lot of things just seem to be, you know, seeping through the floorboards, and we're not, unless you hear it differently, Judge, I'm just not hearing the outcry as much from D.C. as I hear around cities where people are being affected, people that, you know, you may know are being affected.
Yeah, we've done our best to try to educate and inform our elected officials of the issues. Many are very supportive, and that's why you've seen the funding for the problem-solving courts federally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drug court, veterans court, mental health courts have been very well funded in the recent recent past, and that will continue to be funded. But you're right, on the supply side, we need to do something to stop the flow into our country.
Yeah, I know. It's. I said this around someone once, and they looked at me like I was wishing ill will on someone, and I wasn't. I said, you know, a lot of, not just these problems that we've been talking about, but a lot of problems don't seem to resonate with a lot of the big decision makers until, knock on wood, their families are affected. You know what I mean? Sometimes it has to be brought to somebody's front door before there is a real call to action.
I would agree with you, and that's true of anything, whether it's homelessness, transportation.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have a home or you don't have the adequate transportation, then you realize the need in our community.
Yeah, I mean, it's and I just get this bad feeling. A lot of that stuff is kind of piling up like a snowdrift, and I don't think it's good. Because at some point, you have to deal with it, right? And, you know, I always think if you nip it in the bud and get it early, you know, it's not main. You'll be able to knock down the problem a little faster, and it doesn't become a bigger problem that you need to deal with. September 12th.
Yeah, there are people working towards that. I got to compliment a federal court judge, Brucey Hendricks. She's been heading an opioid task force called ACT Force, trying to get into schools and in the community and educate about the harms of these drugs, such as fentanyl. And then they'll also track, they've got a thing called OD map, which shows the overdoses in a certain area. Many times overdoses occur in one area, and the police, the authorities can get in there and try to warn everybody there's a bad batch out there. If you use from this area, there's a highly likelihood that you may die. So there are individuals trying piece by piece to do what they can to educate and to stop drug overdose. Others are working on the mental health front, compliment the Department of Mental Health and their programs. They started the mobile crisis. They now have this this hotline, this 988, if you're suffering a mental crisis that you can call 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
There's other organizations. We can all help ourselves with this smart911.com in Charleston. If you go to smart911, you can put in your medical information so that if EMS has to come see you, they can turn around and know your medical information in your next of kin to get information to help you in that emergency. So there are groups, there are resources. We're all trying to work together to, you know, combat the issues, you know, facing our society.
Yeah, and not just here, but this stuff is happening coast to coast. And it's good to know that these kinds of efforts aren't just happening here to help people get off drugs or get their mental state a little more even. But these are happening across the country, aren't they?
They are. And, you know, even locally, our Department of Mental Health is trying to have a counselor, a mental health counselor at every, you know, high school and every school to get the individuals the help they need. You're seeing more of an acceptance to get treatment and to realize that mental health is an issue for all of us. And so you're seeing that stigma hopefully go away and people will get the treatment and the help they need.
You know, the prescription commercials for new medicines are on TV all the time. And I commented to someone in that field, the substance abuse, the field of helping people get off drugs, and he was talking about stigma, and I said, you know, you're seeing drug commercials using the word, you know, schizophrenia. I said, I would think that that might be a way to kind of break down the stigma by just kind of coming out and talking about the help that's available to, say, help those dealing with schizophrenia. You know, you put it out there and maybe it doesn't sound as shocking, if that's the right word.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You know, in our talk here, I also want to highlight, you know, the work that MUSC with their Institute of Psychiatry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the work they're doing. And then also we've got a private provider in North Charleston, you know, Palmetto, the facility up there in North Charleston. So there are people that are trying to do the best they can. And also our local VA. We've got the Ralph Johnson Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
And then a new facility up there on Rivers Avenue. And actually, I think mental health has actually come up with a mobile unit that goes around and educates on mental illness, almost like a bookmobile.
Yeah, I remember those. Well, you know, people out there can't say that no one's trying, because I know I've talked to a lot of people who are part of organizations that do a lot of this work, and there's help out there. And again, you all are supplying what one of those touch points with a workshop September 12th, 6:30 p.m. at the Baxter Patrick Library, 1858 Grimble Road on James Island. It's free and people can just show up, right? If they want to know more, if they have a loved one they cry over because they need help, they can just walk in and attend this.
Right. They can show up. And then also we have others. And if they go to our Charleston County Probate Court website, they can look at the outreach that we're doing. We're throughout the county from, you know, down in Edisto to all the way up McClellanville and to North Charleston. And if you haven't been to our local libraries, they now have they've all been renovated and they have beautiful community rooms. And beautiful resources for our citizens.
Absolutely. So if people need more information about what these workshops are about, where can they go to find that out?
Again, back to our website, or they can talk to our coordinator, and that would be Ms. Jamie Robinson. And let me get her number for you, but... And if they want to reach out to me, my number at work is 843-958-5193. And my cell is 843-817-2039. So they can call me at any time. I'm here to help. But our coordinator for this, our community outreach person, is Jamie Robinson. And she can be reached at 814-1707. Her email address is jrobinson@charlestoncounty.org. And my email address is irvcondon@charlestoncounty.org. We're here to help you and assist you. If you have a group that you want us to come speak to, whether it's on getting treatment for a loved one, whether it's estate planning, or whether it's estate administration, we're always available to help.
Judge Irv Condon, you have been just a font of information, and we really appreciate it. Thank you so much, and good luck with the workshops. They're doing good work. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on today, Sherry. Really appreciate it. Have a great day.